worth asking ourselves what each of us, as politicians or journalists, but most of all as citizens, may have done to contribute to this atmosphere in our politics. I was going to call it carnival atmosphere, but that implies fun.
I think before I would think about apologizing, he owes me an apology because what he did was wrong.
Every week seems to be a new low point in this race. This is like a made-for-TV movie meets high school locker room.
But the Republicans have sown with their extremist tactics. They are now reaping with Donald Trump's candidacy.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10 and it is Tuesday. Welcome to another day. It is the 29th day of March 2016. This is The Opening Bell. The day is unfolding in a violent fashion in Egypt this morning and Cyprus, where there's been a hijacking. We're going to keep monitoring that, but it again brings up the problem and the concerns about potential air safety in the Middle East, especially in Egypt, where they have had their fair share of problems over the last year or so. This aircraft apparently had 10 Americans on board. Sky News is reporting that all of the passengers are off, including the Americans. It's only crew that remain on board. A couple of buzzwords that you're going to be hearing today. One of them is inflation. The other is decryption or unencryption. Whichever you prefer. Those are the big stories this morning. The first has to do with Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve Chairman, who will speak later today at the New York Economic Club. She has a speech scheduled for 10:30 Chicago time. And then decryption. That's the story involving Apple. You may have heard as you went to bed last night that the FBI no longer needs Apple's help in getting into that iPhone of the San Bernardino shooter. Justice Department filed a brief in federal court in California, and that brief basically said you can kill the court order against the company Apple, and the judge promptly did it. There were only a few sentences in each of the orders and no other information, but we had heard recently that perhaps that the FBI had found a company in Egypt, or rather in Israel, that was helping them get into this iPhone. What does this mean going forward for the future? ABC's Rebecca Jarvis would have told us this morning that it means that they don't need FBI's help, Apple's help anymore, that they apparently have some way of getting into this phone and presumably other phones in the future. So, well, what if you thought, what if you had a vacation, a job that offered you unlimited vacation? Standard is, what, 2 weeks for most of us? I think that's what I get. Some people may get 4 weeks, depending on years of service. Unlimited vacation is sort of hard to fathom, but Alexia Ruiz of the Chicago Tribune is with us this morning on The Opening Bell, and she's been writing about unlimited vacation. Good morning, Alexia. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So unlimited vacation, does that mean just you just take as much time off as you want?
Yeah, it means that there's no official caps so that you can determine, basically there's more flexibility. So you can take a day here, you can take a day there, you can take 3 weeks in the summer, as long as your manager is okay with it and you're able to get your work done.
And how many companies are doing this?
Not a lot. A very, 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 very small number. It started in Silicon Valley, as things do on the in the workplace, with some of the big tech firms introducing this as a big perk. And now it has seeped into more traditional companies. So most recently, a big PR firm based in Chicago rolled it out. Grant Thornton, an accounting firm, announced last year that it was switching to unlimited PTO. And a few other more mainstream companies have done it, but it's still like 1 to 2% of all companies.
We're going to get into why companies might be doing this, but it's odd that this is happening because we're a country that normally doesn't take vacations. A lot of us, I think there was a survey recently that said a lot of us don't even use the vacation we get. How does this play just sort of in a grander scheme of things with vacations? Is this, are companies trying to get their workers to take more time off?
They say that that's what's happening. I mean, what you just described, this kind of workaholic culture that we have is the issue. People who are lucky enough to get vacation, which is certainly not everybody, of course, don't even take all of it because we are just, you know, operate by this ethos that we couldn't possibly get away. You know, how would it look? How would I get everything done? All that. So companies say that this is a way to prevent burnout as well as kind of just be an attractive perk for employees. There are, of course, potential ulterior motives because it also saves companies some money because when people can't accrue great vacation, companies don't have to pay them out for those unused days when they leave and they don't have to carry around that liability on the books.
We're going to continue our conversation. I have more questions for you about this. It's very intriguing, and we want to see if there's a trend developing here. We're talking with Alexia Ruiz of the Chicago Tribune.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stock markets rose today after Chinese industrial profits rebounded into positive territory, and U.S. economic growth was stronger than expected. Benchmark U.S. crude oil rose overnight but remains under $40 per barrel. Looking ahead, a new survey of economists indicates growing pessimism. Most of the 48 experts surveyed by the National Association for Business Economics now expect that the U.S. will grow at 2.2% this year. That's down from a December prediction of 2.6%. Smaller players in the exploding fantasy sports industry say they could be shut out of some states by legislation that's actually intended to recognize the legality of the games. Indiana, for example, plans to charge fantasy sports companies a $50,000 licensing fee. And passenger frustration over slow in-flight Wi-Fi might be alleviated by new technology. The airlines are switching from old air-to-ground systems to satellite-based Wi-Fi that offers speeds of 10 to 20 times what you'll now find on board. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 520. Welcome back to the program. We're talking with Alexia Ruiz of the Chicago Tribune. Unlimited vacation is the topic that she's written about in the paper. You can find it at chicagotribune.com. Alexia, before we went to the break, we were talking about how this some companies were doing this. Is the end goal here to try to retain some of the top talent that these companies are looking for?
Yeah, that is definitely one of the goals. It's just like another perk that they offer, but potentially not the only goal.
When I mentioned earlier that America has a problem using its vacation, I found the statistic I was looking for. The average American gets about 21 days of vacation, only uses about 77% of it, forfeiting about five days annually. Are there drawbacks to offering unlimited vacation? Have there been lessons learned with this already?
Certainly. I mean, you'd think that if you were given unlimited vacation, you might, you know, go hog wild. That's not what has actually happened on the ground at some companies. Some companies that introduced this found that people actually took less vacation because suddenly they didn't have any structure around it. So it was like, what is actually an appropriate amount? And so they started, you know, thinking, well, what am I taking compared to the guy next to me? And, you know, so it actually was counterproductive at a few companies. And what some of the experts told me was that what makes or breaks this, you know, when this actually works, it has to be a culture change too, and it has to come from the top.
What kind of dollars are involved here for companies that offer vacation, not just unlimited vacation, but regular vacation? Are they saving money? Are they spending a lot of money? Are they wasting money? What do the figures show?
Well, the cost for companies, one of the costs comes in when people do not use all their vacation days. So if you get a certain allotment and you don't use all of it, you've earned those days and you're owed money on those days. Some states like California require that companies roll over those days from year to year. So you can accumulate a lot of days and actually a lot of money if you don't use them. And some people use that even as savings. And then when they leave the company has to pay them out. In Illinois, we don't require employees to roll them over. So people still earn their days. And if you leave, you know, within the same year that you haven't taken those days, you get paid out. So that costs companies money. I don't have my story in front of me, so I can't remember the amount. Maybe you have it, but it's in the millions of dollars. And so basically eliminating the set vacation days and making it unlimited, when you don't have a cap, you don't earn any days either. So that takes that liability away.
The average vacation liability per employee, about $1,800. In the U.S., companies carried forward about $65 billion in accrued paid time. That's a lot of money that the companies were carrying forward. And there, you know, there are some companies that do allow this to roll over and people don't take their vacation. And like you said, that becomes another issue here. But I'm wondering, is there any reflection on an employee's performance when they take unlimited vacation? Because in your story, you write about one woman who went to watch March Madness and then she went shopping. Does an employer look, I would be afraid that an employer would be looking down on me for that.
Yeah, that's exactly the concern, right? Is like, is this okay? Will this look bad? But the companies that have learned from those where it didn't work out are trying to make it clear to their employees that they want them to take vacation, that they want them to take those off days to go watch March Madness and, you know, go to the home improvement store because it'll be less full, as long as they have worked it out and make sure that, you know, that they don't need to be around for that day. I mean, it's not all that different from what we have now, right? Like, I have, I think, 20 days. No, I don't remember, something like that. And I can do whatever I want with them. I don't necessarily have to tell anybody what I'm doing as long as I fit within those boundaries. So it's the same idea that you can, you know, do whatever you want with your days, be responsible about them, but you don't have to be like carefully parceling out a day here and a day there. And I better not take too many because I have a 2 week, you know, 2 week break off in the summer. Instead you can kind of lift the anxiety of that.
You write about one software company that had one of these unlimited vacation, and it confused the employees to the point where they just canceled it and rolled it back to the regular vacation policy.
Yeah, that happened at Kickstarter. Actually, it got confusing, and so they just took it away and they implemented a regular 25-day limit. But then another software company in Germany actually did something interesting because they did it, and again they had the issue of people getting confused. And he wanted to really make it clear that, like, no, you know, I really want you guys to take vacation. So he implemented a 25-day vacation policy of a minimum. So employees are required to take at least 25 days a year.
And the word there you said required. Some companies now are actually requiring employees to take their vacation.
Yeah, or at least they're incentivizing them. Another company, Edmunds.com, pays people, or give people like $500 as a incentive to take vacations. Other companies give quite a bit more, up to like $5,000, I've seen.
I'm interested to, before we let you go, we have about 30 seconds here, but is this a trend that's going in the way of unlimited vacation, or the trend going backwards from this unlimited vacation?
That is a good question. I think it's going towards it. I think that as companies kind of like realize how to do it and realize that there are some savings there, it's kind of a win-win for companies, then more will get on board. I don't think it's going to be something probably where every single company is switching to this, but I think you can see more companies shifting. I mean, the number of vacation days that Americans take every year has actually gone down. We take an average of 16 days a year from like 21 days in the mid-90s, and it's been a steady drop. So it's an actual problem that companies are dealing with.
Alexia Ruiz of the Chicago Tribune has written about this. A very good conversation. We're going to link to your story so people can get a look at this themselves. Good of you to be with us this morning on the Opening Bell. Glad to have you.
Thank you for having me.
It's 527 here on 720 WGN. Over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn is watching developments around the world. Vic?
Well, Steve, Americans were on board a flight that was hijacked overnight, so that's among the concerns this morning. It's still a standoff situation with officials on the tarmac at Larnaca Airport in Cyprus, where it was forced to land. So we have more details on that coming up.
It's 528.
From ABC News, tech trends, changing the college experience with an app. While many of his classmates spent the summer at the beach, college sophomore Mika Onditi was doing something else with his time.
A lot of reading and a lot of studying, a lot of trial and error and coding.
Despite having no experience in programming, he decided to learn how to create an app.
I mean, most people go away to vacation. I was in solitude in my room.
And all that hard work paid off. Mika launched the MyVee app in December. The goal, to make college textbooks more affordable by giving students a platform to buy and sell their used textbooks. And by eliminating the middleman, the bookstore, Mika says it's a win-win.
I mean, receiving nearly like $10 or $20, $30 back on like a $200 book just so that they can then come right back around and sell it to again, for $200 just really make no sense.
MyVee has already a couple hundred users at colleges all across the Northeast, and the app gets 7% of the sales from regular users. With Tech Trends, I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It is 5:37. Here are some of the other big business stories making the news this morning. California Governor Jerry Brown is hailing as a matter of economic justice his decision to sign a bill that raises that state's minimum wage to $15 an hour by January 2022. Also, the FBI is investigating today a computer virus that's crippled information systems at the major Washington area hospital chain MedStar Health, Inc. The virus has affected Washington's Georgetown University Hospital and other medical offices in the region. MedStar says in a statement that the virus has prevented employees from logging into systems, but says all of its clinics remain open and functioning. Of course, the FBI's concern here is that this is another case of ransomware. Later on this morning, as you heard Vic mention, Janet Yellen is scheduled to deliver remarks in New York. She's scheduled to speak at the Economic Club of New York. In the past few days, as many as four or five Federal Reserve officials have been talking about inflation concerns. And so we kind of wonder what Janet Yellen might say today. Let's bring in CNN Money editor Heather Long, who is with us on the program this morning. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well. It's if you listen to all of these Fed officials, it really sounds like they're kind of setting the stage for an interest rate hike.
It does. That's certainly been what's been expected. They keep saying April is a live meeting. Yellen has been a little bit more cautious, for instance, in her remarks after the March meeting. She was the one who would say things like the live meeting, it's a possibility. But some of her colleagues, as you mentioned, have been a lot more sounding like they might do it in April. I still think it's a long shot. This Fed has been always erred on the cautious side since she's come in. And I think while we've come back a long way since where we were in January and February when the market was down 10% and China was looking very shaky, we're obviously in a much better place than we were then. But I would be surprised if they feel that confident to do it in April.
There have been a couple of business reports this week, economic reports. Yesterday was a busy day of reports. We saw some mixed results in those. We expect to see some more stuff later this week. What are you seeing in these reports, and is there reason there that Yellen might find to be concerned?
Well, I think it's more of the same. So Friday was slightly better news. Yesterday was mixed news. So Friday we saw a better than expected revision to GDP for the end of last year, but that's pretty far back looking. And then yesterday, again, kind of mixed results on where we are with how much people are spending in the economy. It continues to be this good but not great economy. And that's where we've been for a long time in the United States. What has changed, and if you're Yellen and other members of the Fed, what has changed is that the concerns from abroad look a lot more tame than they did even just a few weeks ago. I think the big thing that I'm looking at is we have come back hugely in the market. Q1, we often end the first quarter down in the market over the years. If you look back in history, I was just looking at the stock trader almanac, but the month that is usually so critical to the market is April. And so I think we all kind of need to watch where the market is, what it's doing in April, because more often than not, April is a very positive month.
There was a bright spot yesterday. Pending home sales move forward. The Midwest seems to be seeing quite good numbers in this area. Are there other bright spots, too, that might bode well for us as an economy?
Sure. Yeah, great question. I mean, the one that just keeps shooting the lights out is jobs in the United States. You know, we're coming off 2 years of the best job growth since 1999, and a lot of people thought 2016 we would see a real slowdown in hiring. So far, we haven't. February was a great month, and this Friday, the number that people always tune in on is when those new we'll get the March figure for how many jobs were added in the economy. And so far, we continue to add over 200,000 new jobs a month. And that's pretty spectacular, especially with everything that's going on in the energy industry, where we've lost a lot of jobs in the energy sector lately. So I think that's great. The other thing that I've been keeping an eye on, and I think the Fed has mentioned, Janet Yellen says it just about every time she speaks, which is wage growth. You know, it's sort of the one black mark, if you will, on the Obama economy is that, sure, people are back to work, and that's huge, and that's helping what you said. It's helping people feel confident to buy homes, and it's helping people feel confident to buy cars. Auto sales are at an all-time high, but they're not. They still feel angsty. You know, you look at all these polls when people come out of the voting for the primary, and they say, gosh, I'm worried about the economy. And you say, why are they so worried? It's because their wages really haven't increased. A lot of families are earning the same amount as they did 20 years ago when you adjust for inflation.
And that's you hit on a good point there, because it's sort of like a stray dog who's afraid to come back and get a treat after they've been, you know, beaten. It's sort of, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of people still remember 2008 and moving forward there. I can see where people are concerned. Does that play into it? Is it a mentality that still exists with people?
I think you're dead on. I've been spending a lot of time going out and talking to real voters across the country in the last few days. And the thing that I hear over and over again is even when people have jobs, they feel that they're in the middle class. They have a job that, say, pays between $50,000 and $80,000. They constantly say to me, but I feel one step away from financial ruin. And, I mean, it's a very pronounced statements like that. And what they mean is they know that they could lose a job. If they or a spouse loses a job, then they could lose their house. They wouldn't be able to make it. Or people are very concerned about health care costs. And they say, again, if I have something happen to me, or God forbid my child, or maybe my elderly parent has something, that would cost us probably thousands of dollars. And we feel that we don't have that kind of savings. We don't have that money for if a bad turn happens to us. And that's why there's just so much angst, though. And I think you're right. They're looking back at the recession, and you know, 1 in 10 people were out of work. I think people have realized, even in the middle class or upper middle class, they look around, they say, I know people who've lost their job. Maybe it even happened to me or someone in my family, and they are very cognizant that it could happen again, and they don't feel prepared for that.
We're having a conversation this morning with Heather Long of CNN Money. And Heather, if you can stay with us, we'd like to keep you for another segment and chat with you after we take a break for traffic. Perhaps we can look at the day ahead, and maybe there are some more road bumps coming up that you can tell us about.
Sounds great.
All right, we will take a break here. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
549, Dow futures are lower this morning, pointing toward a lower open on Wall Street, off about 30 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures also lower this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. Turned out to be a fairly quiet day in the market yesterday after the three-day Easter weekend. As far as livestock prices are concerned, traders at the Mercantile Exchange had that quarterly pig crop report to react to. I didn't think it was that much of an impact, but it was enough to push the June lean hog contract up $1.77. It ended the day at $82.62. While April live cattle dropped $1.10, June cattle down 17 a hundredweight, and the April feeder cattle contract ended the day at $155.20, down 62 cents for the day. Weather became a factor in the grain market again yesterday as far as wheat is concerned. Technical buying, short covering amid concerns about cold weather in the winter wheat belt that could damage some of the. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. And we're back here on The Opening Bell, wrapping up with Heather Long, by the way, on Twitter, by Heather Long. Heather, the dollar obviously is going to be important moving forward. We'll see what Yellen says today. Are there any other potential pitfalls in the economy that could derail things?
Well, I think your commodities expert just said it, and that is, since the beginning of the year and into last year, oil. Where is the oil price? We're kind of in a sigh of relief now. It sounds crazy to say. People wanted oil prices to go up. So in February, you know, they were below $30 a barrel. Now they're at $40 a barrel. And that makes it a lot more palatable for some oil producers in this country and around the world to continue to produce oil. But it's been so strongly correlated with the stock market. And there were fears of that it would spill over, that those losses in the energy sector would start to pull down the manufacturing and the industrial sector, and that could trigger a broader concern. You can also look at it the other way, and what we'll probably see Janet Yellen say today is that she's been one of the loudest voices saying, I think this cheap oil is just a transitory effect, is her favorite word, so meaning it's not going to last long. Oil prices will go back up, and that's going to start to cause inflation again, which is her other key buzzword from Fed officials.
Heather Long, CNN Money, thanks as always for being on the Opening Bell. You can follow her at By Heather Long, BY Heather Long. It's always great having you on the Opening Bell.
Take care.
It's 5:52, and we'll transition now to United Airlines. Everybody asking, what the heck is going on? First, their CEO goes out, has a heart transplant, recovers quickly, miraculously almost, comes back to work. Now he's facing a proxy fight. Take a breath. Chicago-based United Company is in potential trouble. There's a proxy fight going on. Let's bring in on the program this morning Drake Bennett, who is a writer for Bloomberg Business, and he's covering this. Drake, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What is going on at United, and where do things stand today? There was this proxy fight. They wanted to replace the CEO. There were other things going on. Where do things stand today?
Right. Well, Oscar Munoz was brought in to try to clean up the mess after CEO Jessam Isaac had to step down in a pretty messy corruption investigation. And then Munoz, a lot of people were very excited about him, but he, within about 5 weeks, had a heart attack, then had to take leave. It turns out he needed a heart transplant, and all along the company said he'd be back, you know, end of first quarter this year. As soon as he comes back, though, a couple of the biggest investors in United, a couple of big hedge funds, announced this proxy fight that they were going to they wanted to put several new board members of their own on the United's board, saying that it lacked executives with it lacked board members with real airline management experience. And the leader of that slate was Gordon Bassoon, who was the CEO of Continental, which is one of the two airlines that merged into present-day United, a really beloved figure at Continental, turned the airline around back in the 90s. So he's still pretty popular with a lot of, especially former Continental employees at the airline, And the idea is that he's going to really help bring some hands-on managerial experience. I mean, Bassoon came up through the ranks as a real airplane guy. And Munoz, when he came back to the company, among accusations that it sort of had forgotten how to do the kind of basic blocking and tackling of running an airline, Munoz turned to Bassoon. He's one of the first people he called. And so this... is someone who's been thinking a lot about the problems of the airline.
And when last we left them, there were weeks of talks between United and these funds. They broke down earlier this month. There, at least as far as I know, no date for their annual shareholders meeting. So where does this stand? And is this comes at a time, because the last time we talked to you here on the program, we were talking about how United seemed to be turning things around. Is this potentially going to hurt that effort? And where do we go from here?
Right. I mean, the argument of United is that exactly that they were starting to get this together. And it's certainly true that if you look at the financials, United did very well last year. You know, a lot of that has to do with oil prices. But they also, if you look at all these various measures on which airline performance is measured, if you look at sort of on time, you know, lost bag, customer satisfaction, all that stuff, United really was heading in the right direction. So their argument is that just give us a little more time. I think Altimeter and the two hedge funds that are bringing the proxy battle, their argument is that, you know, they've given the airline enough time at this point.
So do you know if they're going to have this meeting soon, or are they still talking behind closed doors, or where do we go from here?
I think they're still talking. I mean, I haven't heard a date, but I think talks are continuing.
Well, we'll keep tuned in to you. Obviously, we'll follow you on Bloomberg Business Week. It is Drake Bennett with us. You could follow him at Drake P. Bennett. Thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning, Drake.
Thank you, guys.
By the way, United Stock this morning, pre-trade is up just a little bit, trading at $57.91 a share, Chicago-based United Continental Holdings. That's our program for this morning. The opening bell will be back bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. Until then, by the way, our producer, Mary Sandberg, production help from Mike Jacobson. Ben Cortez is our engineer. We will have the Steve Cochran Show next. Nick is filling in, Nick DiGilio. And I'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning here on The Opening Bell at 5 o'clock. Have a great day.